Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. You are listening to NABWIC Talks Radio, and I'm very excited. We have a very interesting guest this morning from the U.S. Small Business Administration. He's going to fill us in on the details regarding the 8A certification, and we're going to find out how this certification can benefit our businesses. And I'm going to introduce, his name is Daryl Harrison. I'm going to introduce him to us, to our listeners this morning, and if you like, you can join the show by calling area code 714-459-3918. And if you have a question for us, you can press 1. But in the meantime, you can listen either online at going to nabwic.org and following the link to Blog Talk Radio, or again, you can call in at 714-459-3918. And with that being said, the National Association of Black Women in Construction, we're trying to promote business development among our listeners and helping them to appreciate how they can further develop their ongoing businesses. And we're doing that by featuring the U.S. Small Business Administration and their 8A certification. So we have with us this morning Daryl Harrison. He's on the line. Good morning, Daryl.
Good morning.
Great. Let's start off with our first question. Can you help our listeners to appreciate what your role is with the Small Business Administration?
Yes, certainly. And first of all, thanks for having me on the show this morning. It's a good opportunity to talk about a really good program at SBA. My role here is as the Associate Administrator for Business Development. And in that capacity, I'm responsible for the nationwide management policy and oversight of the Section 8A program. It's a program that's referred to as Section 8A because that's the section of our small business statute that authorizes the program. And it's a business development program designed to assist companies that are owned by eligible individuals. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we get into your questions.
Exactly. So with your role being so extensive, covering the entire U.S. and a lot of your responsibilities, it's a fairly heavy responsibility that you carry, but what do you enjoy most about your role with the Small Business Administration?
Well, I've been around the agency for a number of years and served in a number of capacities, and this particular program has been near and dear to my heart. It's really a program that provides services and assistance to individuals who are attempting to start businesses and attempting to enter into markets that can be difficult to enter into. And we have the opportunity to work closely with those companies. And what's really most rewarding about it is the opportunity to see the real benefits of the services that we provide.
That's exactly right. And so now, since we mentioned the 8A certification a couple of times, but help our listeners to appreciate exactly what it is.
Well, as I mentioned before, the 8A program is a business development program, and it was designed to assist companies that were owned by individuals who are deemed to be socially and economically disadvantaged. And to get into that program, there's a pretty rigorous certification process. There's an extensive number of eligibility criteria that have to be met to enter the program. The primary intent of the program is to make certain that those individuals who are deemed to be eligible are the primary beneficiaries of the services provided by that program. And as such, you know, over the years, we've had a certification process that has evolved to ensure that those benefits are limited to those individuals. The application process generally takes somewhere between 90 and 120 days, and we do look at a lot of information when we review those packages.
And you mentioned the program being geared towards individuals who are socially and economically disadvantaged. And so how would an individual know, or how would an organization or company know if they are considered socially or economically disadvantaged?
That's a good question. It's really difficult for an individual to actually he or she or he himself know that they are actually socially and economically disadvantaged. However, we do have really good guidance that is available in a couple of places. First of all, on our website at www.sba.gov, we have a really good overview of the program and the eligibility criteria. Our local district offices, every state in the United States has at least one SBA local office, and through that office you can get a lot of assistance and guidance in respect to the program. And additionally, we have a number of resource partners around the country. Just to mention a few, the Small Business Development Centers, Service Corps retired executives are all available to assist companies with determining whether or not they may be eligible to participate in the program. But the real Bible is our Code of Federal Regulations, and that's what we refer to as Chapter 13 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 124. And the regulations are pretty well laid out there. Now, from a synopsis, a socially disadvantaged individual by statute is one who has been subjected to racial or ethnic prejudice or cultural bias within American society because of their identification as a member of a particular group. Under the rules, we presume that the Black Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, and Asian Pacific Americans are socially disadvantaged. There's no presumption of economic disadvantage for anyone. And I'll mention, you don't necessarily have to be a member of one of those groups to apply for the 8A program. You're just not presumed to be socially disadvantaged. Anyone can apply. But if you're not a member of one of those groups, we use a legal standard referred to as the preponderance of evidence to determine whether or not you have made a case that you have been subjected to social disadvantage. In respect to economic disadvantage, those are individuals who have been subjected to diminished capital and credit opportunities and access to resources that are necessary to start a company. Now, we have some bright line guidelines in our regulations for economic disadvantage. For instance, we have a net worth figure of $250,000 that we use. And when we look at that, we exclude equity in your home. We exclude the equity in the business, and we exclude any type of a pension fund or IRA where you may be subjected to a penalty for early access. We have a bright line total asset test, which is $4 million. We don't exclude anything when we look at that. And then we have an average annual income figure that we use, or it's right at $250,000. So if you have a 3-year average annual income that equals or exceeds $250,000, we would find you not to be economically disadvantaged. Similarly, if your net worth was over $250,000 after the exclusions I mentioned, or if your total assets exceeded $4 million, we would not find you to be economically disadvantaged. The business must be small. It must be at least 51% owned by an eligible individual and controlled by that individual, which really gets into a number of various tests that we use. And it must be a small business, and the individuals must be of good character. So that's pretty much the broad sweep of the eligibility criteria.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners. I see we have a few more that's joined us this morning. And thank you for joining NABWIC Talks Radio. We have a very interesting guest with us this morning, Daryl Harrison, and he is reviewing with us the 8A program, which benefits our listeners in helping them to do a form of business development. So we're reviewing some of the questions associated with the 8A program and determining how a person can be determined eligible for it or where they can go for additional information. So if you would like to join the conversation, you can call in at 714-459-3918. You can listen in there. And also you can press 1 if you have a question. And so NABWIC really likes to have features such as the U.S. Small Business Administration, which helps our listeners to find avenues where they can expand their businesses or basically get reacquainted with maybe some of the avenues they may have been aware of in the past and put them on their radar screen to help them with business development in this particular case. So as we continue to review some of the aspects of the 8A certification and a minority business program, I'm going to ask you, how would a company go about getting certified?
It's really easy. We have an online process. You visit, again, visit our website at www.sba.gov, and all you just have to just the website's one of those kind of logical websites where you just type in a question, what you're looking for, type in 8A program, and it'll pop up. And then there's an icon that you can hit to go to the automated application, and then you can start filling out that application. I highly recommend, though, before you do that, that you actually take a look at all the criteria, and I would recommend that you contact our local office for assistance. The application is really easy. Questions are pretty straightforward, but a lot of times they can be confusing because sometimes individuals are not necessarily clear about what it is that we're asking for, or they're wondering why we're asking what we're asking. So it's just always good to understand, to get a good understanding of what it is that we're looking for. It makes it a lot easier. Once you submit that online application, there are documents that have to be submitted by mail. We look for a lot of backup documentation like corporate papers and financial statements and any types of agreements, and you have to submit information to validate information that you provide on a personal financial statement that we require. So there are a number of items that cannot be submitted through the automated system as it stands now. But that information, depending on where you're located in the country your application goes to, we have processing centers in San Francisco, California, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So depending on where you're located, and you can kind of draw a line down through Georgia maybe from the top of the map, and anything to the left of that line would go to San Francisco, and anything to the right would go to Philadelphia. And that's pretty much it.
Okay. In helping our listeners to appreciate, what would you say the benefits are of getting an 8A certification?
Well, as I mentioned before, it's a business development program, and through that program we provide a number of services. We can provide professional consulting assistance to your firm. We provide to address any type of business issue you may have, whether it's internal accounting systems, marketing plans, strategic plans, some type of technical certifications, assistance with audits, any type of thing that's beneficial to the development of your company, identifying strengths and weaknesses and needs of the company. But I think most important, and what most people know about the program, is one of the tools that we use for business development is access to federal contracts, either on a sole source or a restricted competitive basis. And when I say restricted competitive basis, we have the ability to have competitions for federal contracts that are restricted to certified 8A companies. And then, of course, with the sole source contracts, we have the ability to actually just make a direct award to 8A companies. Any contract that's for construction or services or anything like that that doesn't exceed an aggregated value of $4.5 million over the life of the contract can be awarded on a sole source basis. If it's a manufacturing contract, that number goes to $6 million. Or $6.5 million, I'm sorry. And if it's above that those thresholds, then those contracts are generally competed among 8A contracts. We do about $16 billion a year in federal contracts, and that's somewhere around 5% of the total federal spend on an annual basis. Right now we've got about 6,200 companies in the program, and we're looking to expand that portfolio, by the way. So this is really a good opportunity for individuals who are interested in participating in the program. We also have, within the program, we have a program we refer to as our Mentor Protege program. And under that program, we allow certified 8A companies to bring on a mentor. A mentor could be a graduated 8A company. A mentor could be another large business, not necessarily, it could be any large business that's willing to commit to providing business development assistance to that company. And again, that form of business development assistance can be anything that's identified as a weakness of the company that needs to be addressed to help that company get to the next level. And under that agreement, we allow the protege, we refer to the 8A firm as a protege, to joint venture with the mentor on federal contracts, either 8A or non-8A contracts, without concern of being considered a large business, which is a really big incentive for the mentor to participate and to help these firms develop and grow. Now, obviously, those are circumstances that we monitor. We don't want to see abuses in the program because of that relationship, but we see the benefits that can be derived by our companies when we have really good relationships like that to assist these companies with their development.
Right, those partnerships are very, very valuable there. So that's some very important key points that you're sharing with us this morning. So just touch on some of the things that it would take. It sounds like you mentioned earlier that it takes about between 90 and 120 days on average for a business to attain a certification. But what have you noticed in the process that companies, what is a common issue or common things that can delay the process of getting that certification?
Well, it's generally the paperwork, and it's applications sometimes are not necessarily put together well, or as I mentioned earlier, there's confusion about why we're asking for certain types of information, so it's usually a back and forth process that delays the actual finalization of a decision on the applications. As I mentioned before, we look for a lot of information, and what I tell people all the time is when you sit down and fill out the application, it's okay to get a consultant to help you. It's okay to, you know, that's fine if that's what you want to do. I believe that anyone could actually fill out this application and probably do a much better job than a consultant can, but a lot of times people feel comfortable with having somebody who has experience in putting them together to actually help them. I recommend that even if you do that, you read the application, you read the questions, and you read the answers, and you put yourself on our side of the table and say, if I was a federal person looking at this, what question would I ask because of this answer? And then I would answer that question. But generally what happens is we get an application in, and we have a process where we try to screen those applications within 15 days of getting them. And we generally go back with a list of questions and for areas that we see are deficient. Now, we will not process an application that we consider to be substantially incomplete. So we'll go back, we'll ask for information and ask questions to try to make the application complete. Now, what may happen with that is you will answer a question, which creates another question. So you end up in this back and forth loop. And the interesting thing about it is, under the statute, we're supposed to process these applications in 90 days. The 90 days doesn't actually start until we deem the application to be sufficiently complete to process. So that first 15 days or so doesn't count in the 90 days. And then, of course, when we get the application in and we consider it to be complete, we generally get them out within the 90-day time frame. But there are times during that process when that clock stops and starts. So say, for instance, there is a character issue, and when we get applications that have character issues, we send those applications to our Office of Inspector General. They do a review on those applications. During that process, our clock stops. A lot of times we'll get applications where there appear to be affiliations with other companies. When we get those, we send those for a size determination. When we do that, the clock stops. And those processes can take 30, 40, 50 days sometimes. So to us, we may process the application under the law within 90 days. That application may have been in the process for 180 days. Just depending on the circumstances. Some applications come in and go through in 50 or 60 days. They're very clean, they're very complete, there are no issues with them, and they just go right through the process. So a lot of it depends on the application itself. There's one particular form that I'd like to point out that causes problems. We have a form that we refer to as a SBA Form 912, and it's called a personal history statement. And we just ask for generic information about who you are, any aliases, what your name is, what your address is, what your previous address is, and we ask a couple questions about your history in respect to any type of arrest or criminal activity. And if you answer no, and the answer should have been yes, you will automatically be declined. That is a huge character issue. So for all the listeners out there, if you're thinking about 8A and you look at that form, and I don't care what you're arrested for or whether somebody tells you you don't have to put it on the form, put it on the form. Because if we send it through the process and it kicks back with a criminal record or an arrest record, you will be denied participation in the program on a character issue.
Okay. So now,
and that's a common problem that we see. One of the largest reasons for denying applications. When I talked a little bit about eligibility criteria, I talked about one of the things I didn't mention is that we have a criteria that's referred to as potential for success. And I noticed here that that's actually, I think that's something that we were going to talk about a little bit, one of the things we look for is a track record of performance. We don't expect that this company is a company that's been out there setting the world on fire, but we want to be able to make certain that the firm has the ability to perform. There's some indication of past performance, whether it's with the individuals themselves or with the company. We have a rule that says that you generally must have been in business for 2 full years as evidenced by tax returns. And that's not just a tax return with a zero revenue on it. It's a tax return showing revenues in the industry that you're applying to participate in the program in. And if you're not, we have a waiver criteria that we apply to the application if you ask us to. But what we look for is past performance. We look for access to financial resources and access to the other resources that you need to actually do what it is you say you do, and that you, the individual applying, have the managerial or technical wherewithal to successfully manage and run that company. And so we look at that, and a lot of times that's an area where we find that companies fall short in demonstrating that they really have the potential to be successful in the program.
Okay. So now would a company be able to say that they could partner in the maybe a mentor-protege program to help with those deficiencies, or should they be able to stand on their own?
Yeah, not with the eligibility. Not with the original eligibility. I mean, like I said, we recognize that we're not dealing with a company that's setting the world on fire. If they were setting the world on fire, they wouldn't be eligible for the program. But on the other hand, in the federal government, if you enter into a federal contract, there are two things that you have to do. You have to be responsible, and you have to demonstrate responsibility. Responsible simply means that if the government says they want X, you said, I'm going to give you X. Responsibility means that you have all of those things that are necessary to actually perform the work that's being required. And that's financial, managerial, technical, and integrity and character, okay? When you enter into a contract, we enter into a contract under the 8A program. What people don't realize is that SBA is, in fact, the prime contractor. And when we enter into a contract with another agency on behalf of an 8A company, we are asserting our responsibility to perform. Now, of course, SBA has no ability to build a building or develop a piece of software or do IT integration or whatever it might be. We do that based on the capacity of the firms in our 8A portfolio. So when we make that assertion that we have the ability to perform, we do that based on the capacity of those companies. And that's why that's really a much more important eligibility criteria than most people realize. You know, most people think, well, you know, what's the big deal? You know, you're supposed to help me. Well, yeah, we're going to do our best to help you in all of those areas. But you have to bring enough to the table to help us sort of launch you.
And explaining that the U.S. SBA is a prime contractor, I think that can help our listeners to appreciate it, because a lot of our listeners have a construction background. They can kind of appreciate the way a contract or a prime contract is structured. So I think that brought a lot of clarity to how this particular program is structured.
Right, and most people don't realize that part. That's a very technical part that kind of gets lost in the translation somewhere. But yeah, we are the primes, and we pass that relationship on between the agency and the 8A firm for developmental purposes. So we sort of take ourselves out of it unless we have to get in to try to mediate or help with a problem or something.
So we have a caller. She's interested in joining the conversation. She's calling from out of Florida, and the last four digits of her phone number is 6587. So we're going to open that line. We're going to listen for her question. So let me just do that right now. Caller, you're on with NABWIC Talks Radio. How are you today? What's your question?
Never did get in.
Deborah, you're on with us. How are you this morning?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I can't hear her, but...
Oh.
Yeah, I can hear her either.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and put that back on. All right. So I'm not quite sure what Deborah's question was this morning, but thank you for sharing those couple of pieces of information with us. And just so for our listeners' benefit, the website that they can go to gain some more information is www.sba.gov, and it's /8A, B as in boy and D as in dog, to get some more information on the Small Business Administration and how the 8A certification can benefit them as far as business development is concerned.
Oh, we can't hear anybody.
Okay, so she's still having some...
Yeah, I can hear her now.
Let's try that one more time. Good morning, Deborah. Can you hear us? Okay.
If she has access to a computer, she could actually send me an email and I'd answer it. So.
Okay. Yes, I'm not sure what's happening with her phone this morning, but so I do appreciate you joining us this morning. You shared a wealth of information with us and on the 8A certification, helping our businesses grow. Because heading into 2013, I know a lot of businesses are trying to structure their plan so that they can gain additional market share and increase their revenue. So what better way to take advantage of the 8A certification if they haven't done so already. But one question that I did wanted to ask you. Earlier last month, we had the HUB program on our featured on our program, the Historic Underutilized Business Program. Right.
Right.
Now, just for our listeners, how is that different from the 8A certification?
The HUB Zone program is an economic development program, economic and community development program. It's a place-based program. The eligibility criteria centers on owned by American citizens, and it primarily based on where your company is located. And if your company is located in a designated hub zone, regardless of who you are, if you own that company and 35% of your employees are residents of a hub zone, not necessarily that hub zone, a hub zone, in terms of, and they're located in your primary location, then you're eligible to participate in the hub zone program. So it's a place-based program. It's a pure contracting program. It wasn't designed to be one of those programs where we provide business development assistance to the firm in terms of overall development. And through that program, you have access to contracts that are restricted to competition to hub zones. But you, on a very unique basis, you might be eligible for sole source contracts. The only way they can do a sole source contract under the HubZone program is where that HubZone, where there's only one HubZone program that has the ability to provide that service. Okay, the 8A program, on the other hand, is a business development program, and the contracting part of the 8A program is only one of the tools that's available to help with the business development assistance. And the 8A program, if you're in the HubZone program, you're in the program until you either become a large business and no longer eligible to be considered small, or your area is no longer designated as a designated HubZone area. The 8A program, is a 9-year program. From the date you are approved to participate in the program, you have 9 years to participate in the program. It's divided into two segments. The first 4 years are what we call developmental stage. During that period, we'll give you everything we can give you, all the sole source work, you know, as much contracting activity as we can get you and as much assistance as we can get you. Beginning in year 5 through year 9, we try to wean you off the program. We're trying to build sustainability and viability. So we're trying to get you to a point where you're more reliant on contract activities that are accessed outside of the program. So we look for a mix in your revenues, an increasing mix over the 5-year period of more reliance. We go from about 15% to up to about 55%. In the last year of what we're looking for in respect to how much non-8A work you have versus 8A work. And the reason being, we want you to leave a program with a market that you can rely on to sustain the operations of the company.
Exactly. Great. So we have a caller from Atlanta. Last four digits is 4130. So we're going to open that line, and caller, you can join us.
Good morning. Great show, and thank you so much for being on with us this morning. Just a quick question, and my question is, if you have a boss who is considered to be someone who is working with you and you feel like that person really just doesn't have time for you, takes them 3 to 4 weeks to get back with you to answer questions, or even if you email to get a response, what can that 8A firm do?
And you're in Georgia, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what I would highly suggest you do is just contact the district director in that office and let that person know that you're having some difficulties. You've been trying to contact your business opportunity specialist and haven't been able to do so, and you have some difficulty, and you would appreciate whatever assistance they may be able to provide you. That's the easy, straightforward way to do it. And, I mean, I would not be concerned about whether or not someone is going to be upset or there are going to be repercussions because you did that. I mean, they have a responsibility to be responsive to you, and you have a right to expect that. So if you don't get that, then you should go to the head of the office.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that answer. We're going to try one more call, calling from 8807. I believe that's also Georgia. So, caller, your line is open. Welcome this morning.
Hi, my name is Kim. And
good
I have
morning.
A question for you. Good morning. Really appreciate the program this morning. And I have attended several 8A workshops. And my question more or less is based on the economy and being working as a subcontractor or small government contract on small projects and for over 20 years, but wanting to be in the 8A program with everything going down. And I know what y'all, one of the requirements is the profit margin. What with the economy going down, everybody bidding lower and lower and lower just to survive, how would you look at that, even though the experience is there, but the finance is not there on the your guidelines?
Well, we don't really have any kind of bright lines on the actual profit margin itself, and we understand that everybody's sharpening their pencils and it's difficult to get work. First, let me say that if you've got that kind of experience as a subcontractor and some limited prime contracting experience, that you're perfect candidate for the program because you've you've demonstrated the ability to perform. You've actually had sort of a quasi-mentor somewhere along the way, and if you've been in business that long, that shows some staying power. We're not necessarily concerned so much about whether or not you're making a profit every year. What we're looking at is that there's enough there to be able to sustain the operations of the company. If you're experiencing some losses, particularly over the last few years, that's not necessarily a basis that we're going to use to say no. We kind of look at the totality of the picture. And it sounds to me from what you're saying is that you've got a company that sort of hung in there for a while. You may be experiencing some economic difficulties, but that in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean that you're not eligible for the program.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Sounds like you might have brightened her day a little bit.
Okay, yeah, that's a difficult area because, you know, a lot of times we see companies that have sustained large losses over a number of periods. That's concerning because it doesn't necessarily show that they have the ability to kind of reach back and attach resources to keep them going. But where we see companies that are experiencing, you know, some minor losses and down periods, that doesn't necessarily, and as long as you know they've got inventory of work, it doesn't necessarily mean that the company is getting ready to go bankrupt or we're going to deny them for a lack of potential for success. It just means that's a company that we need to focus on if we get them in the program.
They could probably wind up being one of the success stories, or maybe AA helping them turn themselves around a little bit.
Yeah, very possibly could be.
So that's great. We thank you for the time that you were able to spend with us this morning. Have our listeners remember that this show is archived. It did have a lot of great information in it, what was shared with us this morning. And, again, you can go to the SBA.gov website to get some additional information, or you can even listen to the show again to glean some information that was shared on the program. So we'd like to wish you all a great morning. And, again, thank you, Daryl, for joining us this morning.
And thank you for having me.